Hi, this is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy, and I'm very pleased today to have Maria Lorino with us. She's written several books about Italians and Italian Americans. She's also a professor at NYU. So welcome, Maria. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So I definitely want to talk about the books. But before we do that, I'd like to talk a little bit about your family and where your family is from and research that you've done.
Well, actually, my family and my research are both attached to my books because the first time I really did I went to Southern Italy and tried to find my family was when I was writing my first book, Were You Always an Italian? And I realized that if I wanted to write a book on Italian-American identity and what it meant to be, in my case, a third-generation Italian. That is my grandparents, which I call the first-generation immigrants who came here in the early part of the 20th century. I started to do some research really through relatives. Who's around in the towns? I knew that my mother's side was from a town called Conza della Campania in Avellino, the province of Avellino, and that my father's side was from the town of Picerno in Basilicata. So I went there with my husband made this first trip. My main success was in Conza because we still had relatives living there. And I traveled to Picerno, but I'm the youngest born in my family. So my parents were considerably, and they're the youngest of their family. So my parents were considerably older when I was born. My dad was 44. So his family, there were very few people. There were no Lorinos left that knew had any connection to us, unfortunately. But my mother's side, she still had some first cousins in Conza. So I spent some time there. I spent a week there. And it was just a wonderful experience of living in this town had been destroyed in the 1980 earthquake. And the government, because European governments do things differently than American governments do, actually rebuilt homes and paid for them. For all the homes that were destroyed. And so my cousins were living in really lovely new homes that they built themselves, many of them, because many Italians are very good with construction and working with the hands, but had been financed by the government. So after being homeless, some living in, piled up with relatives, they actually had a decent place to live. And that was kind of wonderful to see and experience.
Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah, we did our first trip. I was living in the UK when I was working for Chase for a couple of years. So we did our first trip 25 years ago almost. We did Rome, of course. You have to go to Rome. And then we went down to Sorrento and we just briefly in Naples, just to really get off the train and pick up a car. And I had no idea at the time that I didn't even know who my great grandmother was at that time, that she lived, that the whole family lived actually about a half a mile from the train station. And they virtually owned the whole block pretty much. We were supposed to go this past April and we had a whole tour set up with Italy Rooting and they were going to, we were going to meet 20 cousins that I found on the internet, Piero Mallo cousins. We've gotten a connection, but we were going to meet in person and all of that. But the interesting thing about the Avellino connection between you and I is that my ninth great grandfather was Prince Marino of Avellino.
Oh, really? Huh. He ruled over my people.
He was the Prince of Avellino and the Duke of Atripalda and the Count of some other place and all of that. So, we were going to go there, of course. And so we're very, very disappointed. We're fingers crossed we're going to be able to go in May or June this year. Hopefully this vaccine works and we'll be able to go. So you got to the town. And so what was the reaction from the first cousins?
Oh my God. Una festa. Oh, they were absolutely delighted and they were so generous. And we had to go from house to house with everybody making their you know, dinners for us. And literally still, I mean, they would, you know, you'd see the chicken in the backyard and they're like, that's tonight's dinner. And I'm like, I don't want to know. Just I'll be there. incredibly generous. It was hard to communicate. I did not grow up speaking Italian because my parents spoke dialect, some dialect, a little bit. They knew it wasn't the real Italian, the proper Italian. So they never, and they really didn't know that much of it. And they also had different dialects because my father was from Basilicata, my mother was from Avellino. So they had grown up, you know, in American schools and they spoke English, but just dialect words for points of exclamation on things. So I had a bunch of dialect words. That's all I had. I studied Italian after college. I took an accelerated course for a couple of years and then through language houses. So I had a basic level. I actually was good enough at that time that I did some interviews. I did a chapter of my book on Italian dialect. I was trying to trace the roots of our words. And I was able to have a rudimentary interview with a professor at the University of Naples. But my cousins, it was kind of doubly hard because they spoke Italian with also a lot of Southern dialect peppered in, not Italian American, but the true Southern dialect. So it was, you know, we tried, but communication was hard. At one point, and it was extremely moving, we connected my mother by telephone to her first cousin. My mother is named Concetta, and we connected her to Concetta. And, but the saddest thing was they couldn't understand each other because Concetta spoke a Southern Italian dialect from Italy, you know, 20th century. My mother spoke the remnants of her parents' dialect from really the 19th century, you know, when they were born in Italy and came here. So my mother was stunned that she couldn't communicate with her cousin. And she called up one of our cousins and she spoke in dialect. She said, "Do you understand me?" And they're like, "Oh yeah, I understand you." So that's what got me actually writing about dialect. I wrote a chapter on that, on what we speak as Italian Americans and how that's changed over the years and become part of the American tongue. Another thing that I found really interesting was how, so deeply tied in tradition Italians are, especially when it comes to naming. You know, that you often name your child after the grandfather. And so there was a parallel world of my grandfather Natale, who came to the United States, his brother Antonio, who my grandfather tried to bring over, but he didn't want to leave, and their children. Antonio had 6 children, Natale had 4, but 4 of those children had the exact same names. So there was my mother, always called herself Connie, but Concetta, my aunt Natalie, there was Natalia, my uncle George, there was cousin Gerardo, there was another Michele, my uncle Mickey had died before when I was very young, so I didn't know him, but there was Michele there. So it was just fascinating to see these two kind of parallel lives. It's particularly because Italian Americans really did stay in their enclaves for a long time when they were in the United States and preserved a very, very Italian world. And it was fascinating. It was really one of the greatest experiences I've had was traveling to Southern Italy and spending time with the cousins.
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com. No, I'm sure. And, you know, we similar background. My dad was the youngest. His older brother and 2 of his older sisters were actually born in Italy, though. But he was born here. My mom, the whole family was born in America, but she was the 8th out of 9. So again, they were both on, you know, like you, towards the younger end. And my uncle Giovanni, they left him in Italy when they came with his grandparents. And I never got the straight answer. I've heard 2 stories. One was that they were going to send for him eventually, but either they didn't have the money or they couldn't, or he didn't want to come because he was, you know, his grandparents were like his parents, I guess. The other one was that they had planned to go back, like many people I understand, you know, did go back. And so all my cousins from him were born in Italy. They came first to Canada around 1950 and had to spend 5 years there. So he didn't see his parents for almost 45 years or meet any of his brothers and sisters until they eventually came over. And the same thing with the language, you know. Whenever they didn't want us to know something, they would speak in Italian. And my mom and dad, my mom grew up with Barese. My father grew up with kind of the upper echelon Neapolitan dialect. So they were constantly fighting back and forth. You don't really know Italian, and you know you don't really know Italian. So that's great. Yeah, I and like I said, we were so disappointed in not doing that. So you decided to write the book. You went to Italy because you were writing the book, not that's the other way around.
Right, right.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm trying to write a book. I'm the furthest thing from an author, but I have a lot of it done, and I was planning on finishing it when I got back, so that's going to have to wait. So that was the first book, and you know, what's the end result of, you know, were you always Italian? I think Italians look at it two ways. I know there's people say, I'm 100% Italian, and I don't care what the DNA says. And other people kind of grasp on to that, well, yeah, I'm a little bit of this, I'm a little bit of that. I try to say it to people is, you know, my DNA may be a lot of different things, but my heritage is Italian.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's a very good question. It's something that I'm constantly grappling with, even after writing that book many years ago. Well, you know, it's interesting. The genesis of that book was that I worked at the Village Voice. I was a reporter, staff writer at the Village Voice, and I wrote mostly about politics, city and local politics, and social issues, homelessness, mental illness, lots of issues that were plaguing New York in the 80s when I worked there. But I was always very, very interested in writing about ethnicity and identity. And the kind of, I grew up in a suburb in New Jersey. I grew up in a very middle-class section of a very wealthy suburb, Short Hills, New Jersey. And we felt the stigma of being Italian. When we moved into our neighborhood, my mother heard the chatter, the whisper of, oh, another Italian moved into the block. So as a child, I was extremely sensitive to this kind of prejudice and this this feeling about, you know, the stereotypes about Italian Americans. And I always wanted to write about that. And I wasn't sure how to do that and how to find the form. When I was at The Voice, I was assigned a feature story on Mario Cuomo, who was then the governor of New York and one of my heroes. And so I went to Albany a couple times to interview the governor, who was a charming man and just fascinating to talk to. But I was trying to place him in an ethnic cultural tradition. And so I had a list of questions for him, and I said, you know, well, did Fiorello LaGuardia influence you? Did Vito Marcantonio, the, you know, kind of leftist radical East Harlem, leftist East Harlem congressman influence you? I'm a fan of Marcantonio, by the way, and I have to ask you for some tips. I have a theory that I could be a distant cousin of his on my father's side. So anyway, I was asking the governor these questions, and he looked at me and he said, were you always an Italian? And when he asked me that question, something just clicked for me. I got what he meant. And I looked at him and I said, no, I wasn't always an Italian. And then he said to me, oh, I know all about ethnic self-hate. And started to talk about what it was like to graduate tied number one for your law school class in your law school class and have the dean say to you, well, if you want a job on Wall Street, you got to change your name. And so we began to talk about these kinds of, you know, insidious prejudice that has affected Italian Americans and that they never really talk about. And I wanted to write about that. And so that question actually framed the book. That was really my exploration. What does it mean to be an Italian American? What does it mean growing up? You know, geography, I think, plays a big factor in how you see yourself as an Italian American. If you're in a very Italian neighborhood, everything's kind of cool. You know, I mean, you're just sort of part of the fabric of the neighborhood. If you're in a very WASPy neighborhood, you feel like the outsider, you know, and then you try to find your place within that. And so those were the questions that I went about wanting to explore. And I also was very interested. I had started traveling to Italy when I was in my 20s. Almost every summer, it became a kind of ritual that I would, you know, just get a cheap flight, find a cheap place to stay. I befriended through an article that I'd written at The Voice, an Italian journalist. She would often host me. And so I started spending a lot of time in Italy, but not southern Italy, in Rome, in northern Italy. And I realized that if I wanted to understand what it meant to be an Italian American, I had to travel to my roots. You know, my roots are in the south, and it's a very, very different life. And so that was the thinking behind it that led to the trip and led to the book. And then the trip was part of my research.
We'll be right back.
Are you a fan of global travel? Are you wanting to see more of the world yourself? Well, then you're my kind of people. My name is DeAndre Koch, and I'm the host of the travel podcast, Revolutionizing Your Journey, where we share stories of everyday people making the most of global travel and also teach you how to do the same yourself. You'll hear stories from people just like you who learned how to travel for nearly free, like Jo, who realized she could take her daughter to Disneyland in Tokyo for cheaper than in the U.S., or Rob, who flew his entire family of seven to Europe round trip in business class, all for less than the price of economy. Check out the link in the description for the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast to learn how to elevate your own travels.
And you know, to your point, I didn't have that as much. I mean, I was in College Point, Queens, which was mostly German Irish, but when we got there, it was starting to become more and more Italian. But my grandparents were in Corona, Queens, which was, it was Italian. I mean, every place you went, everybody you saw, the whole block was Italian. You know, so I didn't really, you know, feel that as much. And the same thing in high school. I went to high school in Astoria, Monte Cristi, and you know, 75% of the kids there were Italian. You know, so we really didn't come into that. But I have heard that about Mario Cuomo, and that I know that he really did not like that mafia type stereotype.
Absolutely.
He was vehemently against that from everything I read about him. And interesting story, when I lived in England, and you know, Italian from New York, you know, they only knew us from the movies.
Right.
So they thought everybody was a gangster. But I did use that to my advantage a couple of times. Get back in that car.
Right. That's the thing. I mean, these things kind of haunt and plague us. Well, you know, when I was in junior high school, it's so hard to believe because of, you know, America is so much more diverse now, but the fact that I had, and that was the other thing, my name, you know, my parents didn't name me Marie or Mary, they named me Maria. So I had a fully Italian name, very popular today, that Maria is a very popular name, but was not popular then. I always begged them, like, why didn't you change your name? Why'd you name me Maria? You know, all of this stuff, because I had all these vowels. And now I think they're beautiful. But when I was in seventh grade, I'll never forget this. You know, you have these moments that just last, that happens to you as a child. The teacher was calling roll call, and everybody's, you know, name is, you know, John Smith and, you know, whatever. And she comes to my name, and I was a very shy kid. And so I said here, but I said it softly. And she looked at me and just stared at me in the face and said, "Do you speak English?" And, you know, it was mortifying. It was like, wow, I'm totally American. And everybody laughs, you know, the whole class is laughing hysterically. And that was kind of astounding, you know, that here I am, third generation. I don't know any Italian. And I'm being asked in class to my grave embarrassment and the laughter of the entire class if I speak English.
Well, my daughter is, my children are adopted. So they're much, we were 44 when we adopted these kids. In our 40, I was, Marion was about 39. But we named her Nicole Louise. My father was Nicholas. My grandparents didn't name him Nicola. They named him Nicholas, even though he's named after his grandfather. We just liked the word Nicole because it kind of went with Sorrentino. And Louis, my wife's uncle was Louis, and he had passed away, and he helped pay for a lot of the adoption bills. So she got that name. But she's like, "Why did you name me that?" Now she's okay. She goes by Nikki, so it's okay. But how did I? You gave me an old lady's name, Nicole Louise. But my brother, my grandfather was Ubaldo. There's no translation even. And my cousin, he's the second son, but he's Ubaldo Di Maria. He eventually named his name to Joe. By the way, he was a photographer for the Post, the New York Post. He changed his name, but my grandfather was very upset with my parents that they didn't name my brother Ubaldo, because he would have, and my mother said, "Well, you have Ubaldo, And he said, "No, it's not Sorrentino." And my mother said, "I love you dearly, but I can't name my son Ubaldo in America, So he became John.
No, it's hard, It's a culture that clings strongly, strongly to its traditions. And then you have this break and how you manage that.
Yeah. And I just read a book and doing a little thing on it. Our Italian surnames, which somebody told me about it. And it's a fascinating book because he does a little bit about the given names, but most of the book is about the surnames and how the surnames came about. And I guess not too different from every other ethnicity, but it is interesting to see how they came up with the surnames in Italy. And there's over 300,000 Italian surnames. More than any other country.
Really? Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess, Italians, they didn't want everybody to be the same. Who knows? So that's fascinating. Now, so I know you did a book where you interviewed a variety of Italian Americans from all walks of life. So what was that? That must have been amazing talking to some of these people like Lady Gaga and Madonna and people like that. But how did you do all of that?
Well, that actually wasn't a direct interview. Those were just, no, what it was there was a PBS documentary.
Yes, I saw it. Yep. Yeah, fast, great documentary.
And the director and writer of that documentary, John Maggio, asked me if I could do a companion book that would be released when the documentary came out. So I based that book on the work that the documentary filmmakers had done in assembling. So, for example, there are 19 parts to the Italian Americans, the documentary. My book has 20 chapters. I added a chapter on the Italian American counterculture because that wasn't covered in the documentary. So we shared a wealth of information. We sort of worked together in partnership that way in sharing information because they had the Lady Gaga and Madonna, I just added, but that was just research. Those weren't interviews. But for example, there were interviews with characters in the documentary that we were able to use for a Q&A in the book. And then what my book did was that, even for 4 hours, no matter how long a documentary is, and that was a fabulous amount of time that PBS allowed for it, there's still so, so much more information that can't be conveyed in the documentary. So that was the idea, to on one hand be a companion. So anyone who saw the documentary would be like, "Oh, I like that. Let me look at this." And then to go more deeply into every story. And so I did extensive, really historic and archival research in order to do that and kind of create different dimensions to the stories. So, for example, there's a wonderful story in that begins the documentary of the Italian Americans on Roseto, Pennsylvania, and how people in Roseto lived longer than other communities around them. And health researchers were trying to investigate what it was about Roseto that kept them healthier. And they discovered that it wasn't particularly genetic, because Italian Americans, most of them came from the town Roseto in Italy. When they had gone to other parts of the country, they had the same health rates as everyone else. And it wasn't geographic, because people in the neighboring communities got much sicker. And what they came to understand was that it was community, and it was the community of Roseto that kept the Italian Americans healthier, because they all helped each other and they all felt that they could rely on each other. They didn't have to worry about being alone. And so it was a really, really interesting story. But I like explored it a little further to try to understand more customs of Italians. And one thing I was really surprised by was that there was a very egalitarian community. Like everybody had very modest homes. The people who were wealthy in Roseto did not have huge homes. They did not have, you know, huge cars. And I thought, well, what is it, you know, about the Italian American spirit? Is there something that's sort of more egalitarian than, you know, what is this about? And what I discovered doing further research from, you know, anthropologists who had spent some time there was that Italians were still terrified of the evil eye. And when the Rosettans came to Roseto, Pennsylvania, they kept a very equal lifestyle among them, because they were afraid that if they had more than others, that the neighbors would cast the evil eye on them. And they were still doing potions back then of, you know, whatever it is you throw over your shoulder and whatever to cast off the evil eye. And it was just a fascinating look at, wow, this is how a community functions. And these are the things that we carry with us, you know, from the Southern Italy to America. Why was it they all lived in such kind of harmony compared to other places? Well, it was both because of that very, very strong sense of community. And it was a little bit of that, you know, mysticism and fear and fatalism that kept them, you know, not wanting to have too much, that people would then be jealous of them, and then, you know, their lives would be ruined. So that was the kind of thing I did in the book, and just kind of elaborating the work that the really terrific writers and producers of the documentary had done for their PBS version.
Yeah, and that really was a great documentary. For anybody listening who hasn't seen it, I would highly recommend it, because it really gives you some deep insight into it. You know, my dad, being a photographer for the Daily News, I mean, he obviously ran into a lot of Italian Americans on both sides of the spectrum. I mean, he, you know, always taking photographs of, you know, most of the New York City, you know, be they mayors or councilmen or people like that. But then also the mafia, and you know, interesting story that I've told a couple of times. The Gallo brothers in Brooklyn were notorious, I guess it was between the 60s and 70s. And my dad, being Italian, I guess, you know, Joey Gallo put up with him a little bit more than he may have put up with, you know, a non-Italian photographer. And one time he was coming out, but he did like his picture taken. And one time he was coming out of the courthouse, and my dad was taking his picture, and there was somebody there who kept trying to push the camera out of the way every time he went to take a shot. So my dad said to Joey, "What's going on? I can't take your picture anymore." And he said to my father, "Don't worry, that problem is going to be taken care of." Well, about a week later, they found the guy in the trunk of a car.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my father came home and he said, "I hope I didn't have anything to do with this."
Oh my God.
Which I'm sure he didn't, but you know, he obviously saw a lot of the Italian and the American experience, as did my cousin Paul, who also was a photographer for the Daily News. So we have a vast record of that Italian American experience. So there was a third book you wrote, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And what's the title of that one? And what's
Old World Daughter, New World Mother? Yeah, that came in between. I did Were You Always, and then Old World Daughter, New World Mother, and then the Italian Americans. That was I wrote Old World Daughter, New World Mother after our son was born, who's now 23, and that was looking at. It was really about culture and the idea of freedom and growing up with very feminist values and trying to put all of this together. It was about growing up in a very traditional Italian-American household where women's roles were very, they were already well, very well defined. And it was to be in the house and it was to, you know, cook and do all of these things. And something I completely did not want to do. I wanted to be educated, go out into the world, you know, and very much wanted to be a journalist. And that's how I started. And these were all really, really important values that I greatly, greatly appreciated my American education for allowing me these opportunities. And then after I had a child, I realized how difficult it was to do both things and how we didn't really have a culture that that valued nurturing. And I tried to examine that and what the gift of American individuality and freedom, and those are great gifts, but there's also the gift of community and collective values and people helping each other. And I realized that there was something from each culture that was very, very important for us to have and to bring together. So that book was kind of an examination of that. And I wrote it a lot, you know, now I'm delighted to see that we're moving forward in terms of there's now paid family leave. You know, I wrote that book in, I don't know, 2009, I think it came out. And that was one of the things I was talking about. You know, why don't we have these kinds of things? We have a culture that is just about the individual. The Italian culture is about the collective unit. And I wanted to, you know, I had this vision of, right, of what many other people share of trying to bring those two things together. So Old World Daughter, New World Mother was that. It was kind of growing up with all these wonderful feminist values, but realizing that those values only go so far for women because this notion of you can have it all. Well, no, any working mother knows, you know, that you can't have it all when you're trying to, you know, raise a child or raise children and work and do everything around the house. And, you know, and so that was that kind of, but it was a memoir where I used my stories and sort of family stories of growing up and kind of going out in the world and sort of thinking about these things coming, you know, bringing those ideas and thoughts together.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's probably one of the saddest things about the Italian American experience is that that's sort of drifting away. You mm-hmm. know, I think for various reasons, I think one of your points is, you know, the individual and stuff like that. But, you know, people have moved away. Families are smaller. We still have it. But I see it with, you know, some of my, you know, second cousins or from, you know, other generation cousins that, you know, will post stuff. The cousins of my generation will post stuff. And, you know, the cousins a generation or maybe even two below that don't understand it. You know, they don't have that experience anymore. And that's kind of the reason why I do some of this and probably you do too, is to try and not to lose that. And I know Dr. Schelsa, who's going to be opening up the museum in October, which very excited that that's going to happen. But I think that's what he's trying to do with the Italian American Museum in New York City is to not that we have to replicate that, but that we don't lose that, that the generations coming after us still know the hardships that Italian Americans faced and you know, to your point, some of the prejudices that some people had. So I think that's real important, the work that he's doing, and certainly others. But going back to what we were talking about before we started, that's kind of why I do this, because I don't want it to be lost. And I just find the stories whether I talk to, you know, author like yourself or a professional genealogist, or some of the most exciting things are just people that have done research and hear their stories and compare and find the differences. It's amazing. And everybody says the same thing. When we go back to Italy, we feel like we belong there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, no, I think that's true. Yeah, 2 points on that. One, I just wanted to say, when we were talking about the story that opens the documentary and my book, The Italian Americans, about Rosetta, Pennsylvania, what this community where, you know, they had lower rates of heart disease than anywhere else in the country because of this environment, that was only for a certain period of time. By the 1980s, their children started leaving because culture had changed and the kids were going off to college. They were finding other places to work. You've experienced that, you know, yourself as a dad. And that's, you know, just part of kind of this progress moving forward. But the protective health ability dropped. They had the same rate of heart disease as anyone else in the country. So, you know, with things that are gained, where there's always loss, and it's always that balance in life, right, of loss and gain. And it's true. I mean, there are things. And so sometimes I think we tend to think that all progress is benign and there's never anything, you know, that's bad about that. But there is. It's a loss and a gain in many, many things. Yes, no, and in terms of the genealogy and people going back that you were saying that feel very Italian, I think that's one of the most interesting things. When I was traveling to Italy as a young woman and spending my time in Rome and Milan and all these great cities, I would make friends there and the Italians would just find it very amusing that I thought of myself as Italian because to them, I'm the American. There's nothing Italian about me. And if you heard my accent in speaking Italian, yes, that would really be confirmed. But what I would try to say to them is, look, I get that, you know, I'm American educated, I'm American grown, but I'm 100%, you know, genetically Italian. And, you know, science is teaching us more and more these days, the very strong factor that genetics has in shaping our character. And so they're clearly part that we are also clearly Italian and we feel it. And this, you know, as you're saying that this is what you hear when people go back. Well, there's a reason for that because genetically that's what we are. And so it's a really interesting balance and exploration, and appreciation of two cultures. It's really the very American story. I mean, that's, you know, going back to were you always an Italian? That was about, well, Americans were hyphenated. We're all the hyphen. We're Italian American. We're Irish American, you know, and it's a great gift. You know, there was a professor once who said that, that ethnicity, if you could appreciate the music, only some hear the music, but when you hear the music, you could appreciate the revelation. And I thought that was a really, you know, he said it more eloquently than I am, but I thought that was a really lovely line that there are some of us who deeply hear the music. And when we hear the music and we explore it, we feel the revelation of that music. And I think that's, you know, perhaps this is what your own experience has been doing this podcast and talking to fellow Italian Americans who are going on that journey.
Definitely. And, you know, there are some people with, you know, just driven to do this. And I don't know why. I mean, you know, I come from a very big family. And, you know, I have one or two cousins that kind of do it a little bit. Most of them are like, ah, what are you doing that for? And I said, you know, I always liked history. So that's part of it. I said, but I always felt I needed to know where I came from. And I don't know why. It's just instilled in me for some strange reason that I don't understand. But anyway, this has been fascinating. I really appreciate you taking the time. I love hearing these stories. And just to close, where can people find your books?
Amazon. That's the easiest way.
And I'll put the links out there so people can find them. Well, thanks again.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.